Watch this. No way!
Hello and welcome back to the Cookie Jar Golf Podcast. I am Tom Mills and today I am joined by Sam Williams.
Hello.
And young Bruce Fitzpatrick.
Howdy.
Today is a very, very, very special day. But before we get on to it, as always, you can get in touch with us on at Cookie Jar Golf.
Instagram,
Twitter.
Facebook.
Twitter. And YouTube.
That's horrible. Manual echo you've done there, Sam.
It was bad, wasn't it? He's trying to preempt it.
I just know it so well. I love watching his face while he's doing it.
And please do get in touch. We do like hearing from you all. So drop us a message or DM on Instagrams or whatever. It is manned by Sam, so who knows what you get back, but please do. Anyway, the 29th of March, we've managed to get out there and play some golf, chaps. How do we feel?
Well, first off, Bruce, you've been injured, haven't you?
I've taken a tactical decision not to play today. I just feel
that's
like
sick.
I thought I would. No, you say that. I'm absolutely, you know, desperate to get back onto a golf course. But I just figured, yeah, you know what? Today's the grand reopening. I'm going to wait one more day. Hopefully things will just die down a smidgen. Course will be a tiny bit quieter. And yeah, the weather's better as well. So call it what you will. No, to be fair, I was actually trying to get a job. After all the abuse I get from you blokes about not having a career lined up.
You've got a very promising career, young man.
Other things
in golf media ahead of you here.
But how did you two find it, more importantly? I obviously haven't played today. Well,
We will move on to that in a second.
We're still talking about how sick you are.
We want to confirm whether there's a fragile neurological sort of issue here on trying to do one rep deadlifts at what sort of 300? What were we going for? 400? What were you going for?
Because are you confusing me with Bryson DeChambeau? Because I don't know what you're on about.
I'm convinced that there was something going on in terms of like deadlifts or bench press or something in the gym on Saturday, and I think this is the reason why we're seeing no golf from Bruce on Monday.
Well, unless you've had a wet dream or something about me doing this kind of thing. I mean, I'm absolutely humble that you think about me deadlifting in your spare time, Sam, but no, I can't say any overexertion in the gym was a reason for me not playing today. More career focus.
Bruce is always harping on about mindfulness. I can imagine him sitting at home thinking how weak we all are for playing golf on the first day back. And he's just sitting there thinking, I can wait one more day. I've got this control that nobody else has. But
morning,
is that right?
He was journaling away this morning. I saw a slab of Lurpak in his coffee this morning as he was journaling mindfulness.
Have you tried bulletproof coffees, either of you?
Yeah, they're just a bit of a faff, aren't they?
They just look revolting.
Despite what one of our good friends on Instagram does, it's not part of my morning routine, no. No, anyway, jokes aside, and enough shots at me, I absolutely understand that running a golf media, or being one third of this golf media enterprise that we've, you know, been doing over the last year, I have lost some credibility in not playing golf when courses have reopened. But I think you guys can make up for it by regaling us of the stories that, you know, you've had from your first day back playing. Tom, do you want to kick us off?
Oh, go on, Tom. You go. Go on.
I've never been so happy to shank a ball around a golf course. Honestly, I was shanking with a smile on my face. I was that, you know, just did not care today because just getting back out there. I mean, it's such a small thing, isn't it? Just walking out on some grass and hitting a ball and counting your shots and counting too many to be impressed with, but still had literally the best time. And I think in the last few months, you know, it's been tough, and I think I found it, I've been sort of mentally frail, and I've just been sort of frayed around the edges a bit. And I came off the golf course today and I just felt happy. Like I'd played
felt
like
rejuvenated.
Anchor, but yeah, yeah, I just felt happy.
That's
it felt
nice.
Good to be out there.
That's why we do it, isn't it?
Lots to work on, which is good.
You've got the feeling to come, Bruce, but I mean, it was, I didn't actually think how much I'd missed golf until I came off the golf course, and I was like, yeah, wow, that's made me appreciate golf in a different light today. And it's a combination of a number of things. For our American listeners, the clocks change. So that means all of a sudden we go from pretty much dark nights at 5:30-ish to 7:38. Sun was out, temperatures warmer. all of a sudden you could spend time with someone that you don't live in a house with, which was an incredible experience. Not that I don't love my wife to bits. And it was just like, genuinely couldn't give a shit what I scored. Couldn't cared.
But you did tell us what you scored, didn't you?
I did. I did. Because it felt like it was relevant at the time. Maybe it wasn't relevant. However, I didn't care what I scored. And maybe that was why. I
was actually really happy with how I scored. And I can pretend I don't care how I scored. But the fact I played really well and I was about shot level pass, and give or take.
Three birdies, three bogeys, something like that. Yeah. I mean, it was all very tidy stuff.
It's so easy to say, isn't it?
Didn't get the flat stick rolling all day. And the nonchalance really adds to it. But no, it was... it was unbelievable how good it was. I think it was a combination of all those factors and time away. It does make you appreciate the game in a completely different way, I thought. So, long may it continue. So hopefully the form continues in that vein, because you boys are going to have to watch out if I keep hitting the ball like that.
You started well, started strong. As you said on the WhatsApp, actually, it's amazing what no expectations can do for your golf game, really, isn't it?
It is, though, seriously. Yeah. I haven't even done any practice swings in the garden. It's not like the summer lockdown where we're hitting balls in our garden all the time. I think everyone's kind of switched off from the sport for 3 months. So you just had like a few sort of whiffs at the ball before you get going. And then, I think no expectation. Yeah, make a good pass at the ball, like I like to say. So good. So good. And so many people all up and down the country now feeling like that, which is... I think that's a pretty marvelous thing.
I mean, I've had non-golfing friends say, I bet you're out playing golf today. And obviously, I was very sheepish when I said,
tried to lift the house at the weekend, love. I've done my back in.
sadly, I'm not. But it was just cool that, a lot of non-golfers are aware of courses open back up. I guess outdoor sport in general, obviously, is back on the cards now. But yeah, just amazing to think that... You'd have never thought that we'd be in this situation where we couldn't actually go out and play golf. But we certainly appreciate it a lot more now.
It's absolutely mad. And it's strange to think that in the last few months that we've been through that you could now, I could say, I'm going to go play golf tomorrow. I don't have to, I could just go to the golf course and play golf. It's not like it's something you've taken for granted so much that you can just wander down the street. And I got back at home and my wife today was like, oh, we should go do something, let's go do something. And I said, yeah, cool. Golf's open. We can do whatever we want. Actually, no, you can't do anything because it's only outdoor sport. We can't go to the shops. Can't have a meal. Can't
play golf again.
But I can play golf, so I'm happy. But you've got to wait a month or so.
But it is just good for the soul. And we're in massive danger here of drifting into sort of Eric Anders Lang territory here, where we're sort of in some sort of spiritual debate about the game. But it is... it was genuinely good for the soul. I was like, this has sorted me out a treat now. So
I hope I feel the same tomorrow when I go and hit some quick hooks.
I hope that back feels okay. I mean, from the picture you sent me, it looked like your technique was all wrong on the deadlift. Bravo for the number of discs we had on the bell.
This is the weirdest non-joke ever.
Right.
Let's move on to the WGC, the real item of business. Okay. So, I don't know who's going to lead us through this match play debacle, but
ask the question.
I
was just going to say full disclaimer. I was going to sit down and watch it, and then I decided to go over and watch paint dry in the garage instead.
Are you not a match play boy?
The final day, I should say. Actually, I quite enjoyed the early rounds, but the pace of play on that final day, I know it's been overdone to death, but it's... Yeah, it was dreadful, wasn't it? Like the amount of time, and I could feel for, I understand that Scheffler obviously in a pretty momentous position, really. Horschel, fair enough, he's won the FedEx Cup, he's been on the biggest stage before, and Scheffler, was right there and understandably quite concerned by it. But I just thought like it was a joke how long they were taking.
Do you think so? First of all, let's rewind a little bit. TV hates match play. That's just a fact of life because of the way that it whittles down to basically two rounds of golf on the last day and the afternoon of the last day. It's not good for TV. It doesn't work. Do you think that slow play is just like a normal how they play golf, but because you can't cut away to other things and other things that are going on that you're just noticing it more, or do you think that that was just genuinely a horrendously slow round of golf?
I think it's the fact you've got nothing else going on. So there's nothing else, and they played pretty poorly as well, didn't they? So, you know, I think there was, what was it, one birdie between them or something. It was pretty average stuff. But that's the nature of match play. You beat the guy. It's not.
You could have probably beaten them actually with your round today. Do you reckon you could?
Certainly. I think I finished hot as well. So, and there was a double chucked in there. Maybe you're right. Yeah, I mean, it certainly was doable. It's just question mark whether I'd have got through the league rounds and the round of 16. Anyhow, there wasn't much to celebrate in the golf, is there? Let's face it. That coupled with the fact that, you know, there's nothing else going on around the venue. What is there to talk about? They can only keep cutting to the sponsors. There isn't enough golf to keep showing. I'm totally in your camp with this, Mills. Yeah, it's slow, but I bet you every round on the PGA Tour is of that similar length. It just so happens. Okay.
Did someone say they clocked like the Scheffler-Kuchar match that was out second on Sunday that had lost a hole or two, and they were going at a glacial pace, to use your phrase, Sam. I get it. They've got nothing else to cut away from. But I don't know. I just think pros talk all the time about, growing the game and whether the distance report is just a load of self-important guff. And it's like, well, if you're out there taking that long over it, it's really not a good example to set, I don't think. Okay, it's windy, but maybe it's just because I get, as you say, match play doesn't go well with TV, but it's great that there is a match play event, because that in many ways was like the traditional form of the sport. That was almost the purest form of golf. Now, you could debate whether that's the case now, probably isn't, certainly in the professional game, but that is still a nice kind of relic of the amateur era. It'd be annoying to get rid of it, but it's just not compelling viewing when they're taking that long.
It's not, but like you said, the early rounds of the match play were really, really interesting. I thought the first few days were really good viewing, because you've got 64 players, they're all out there, they're all playing, the course was rammed, there's loads to cut to. In fact, there was so much shit to cut to that they've just missed a load of really good stuff.
Bob Mack stiffing it from 370.
I mean, the TV cover was horrendous anyway, but I mean, the first few days really good. And I think there is a place for match play, but I feel like realistically, if you're going to put match play on TV, it needs to be a league where there is always matches going on. And I think knockout match play, like you say, it's arguably like the original form of the game, really, but it just doesn't work. It's just by the end of it. And partly because, no offense to Billy Horschel or Scott Scheffler, or indeed Victor Perez or Matt Kuchar, but I just didn't care.
Someone's got to stick up for the event, though. The event's class. I don't really watch much of Thursday or Friday's golf typically on a weekend. I watch more of Saturday and Sunday. I watched a lot more of the Wednesday to Friday and bit of the Saturday stuff than I did the weekend. I think that's cool. It's a great event. I love it. I really enjoy it.
It'd be nice to have another match play event. Hopefully, it'd be good if they could do one in Europe. Like they used to do it at Wentworth, the HSBC. It was, I think Jonathan Yarwood famously said it was the biggest prize in golf at one point. But something like that on the European tour, where they could invite some, global stars along. It'd be great if we could have a couple of match play events a year. And I take your point there, Mills, about maybe not being the most inspiring lineup for the final day. I was backing Victor Perez actually, because I always
same.
I'm going to just be brutally honest. I've still got Paul Azinger's marks ringing in my ears from about 12 months ago. Didn't know where Europe was on a map by the sounds of things, but it would have been, and I thought it would have been great for Perez to just sort of announce himself to old Paul there, old Zinger. But look, still great viewing for the majority of the event, wasn't it?
It was pretty good showing by the Europeans. There was only one in the last sort of on that last day. But I mean, there was some good performances.
Just on that, Tom. Sorry to interrupt. But just on that, that's an interesting topic. Why does European golf punch so far above its weight when you look at it in a match play context? Because it does, right? Ryder Cup, we always punch above our weight in the Ryder Cup. You look at the performance there from the Europeans, really good. Do you think there's a connection with how much match play golf is played at a junior and amateur level in this country and around the Europe versus maybe America that's brought up on a staple diet of stroke play and 72 hole events?
Well, that's interesting because you talk about like the diet that they have. Scheffler was interviewed after, I think, the quarters, and the interviewer said to him, you know, oh, you don't have much experience. And his response was, well, actually, I think I've got tons of experience because all my college career, I just played match play golf. Just tons of match play golf. And he's like, I feel perfectly equipped to play this. So I think they do play a lot of match play golf. I'm in no position that I didn't play any university golf or...
You've not played at collegiate golf. Level in the States.
I've not played college golf in the States. So I couldn't...
I did look for you on the NCAA rankings. I couldn't see your name anywhere, actually, Tom.
You're wrong here. 2008, I was there. Okay. No, it was... I think they get plenty of match play golf. I just think that in terms of... people punch above their weight in match play in general. I mean, you only had one top seed really go through into that last... quarterfinals, whatever it was. I just think these players are so tightly packed that anybody can have a round or two rounds.
Yeah.
Or indeed just bomb out like McIlroy.
Yeah. It's definitely you can just get on a roll, can't you, in match play, and like you know, it seemed like Victor Perez didn't really put a foot wrong for his first few days of play, and then like, you know, I don't know if he broke 80 on his last couple of rounds, yeah. Just by the looks of things, he did look like he was struggling, didn't he? I think he was something like seven over or something in the semi. That's another interesting point, is just how much golf they're playing compared to what they're used to. I mean, it's fascinating. They're playing 36 holes a day on the weekend, really, aren't they? And they've played Wednesday, Thursday, Friday leading up to that. So I think fatigue and just seeing how they kind of like manage stuff there is really quite interesting to see. Horschel, I mean, obviously, you know, the big news last lockdown was what an absolute unit he is on the Peloton bike. So maybe that has some explanation.
I was thinking about it. I was watching it and thinking like seven rounds. I mean, I was thinking back to our longest day that we did on, you know, last year. And I mean, I was ruined playing four rounds of golf, and they're doing seven rounds in 4 days, 5 days. You know, that's basically the equivalent of two marathons in 5 days. Well, shooting lights out golf, like, it's tough.
I mean, you've got first-hand experience, haven't you, Bruce? It's not about the let's wax on with the president's putter win, but it is a
you
it's
know
a
what
similar
the fact
event.
You preface it all the time makes no that work.
It's not, because we always bring it
you
back.
You never have to preface it like that.
I know, but I don't want, you know, I don't want any of our listeners here to think we're blowing smoke up your ass. You know, head is far too big as it is anyway. But it was a hell of a victory, that, and it's a huge week of golf, isn't it? Because you're playing, I think, is it eight rounds in the space of a week? And do you notice, I mean, it's a good amateur level. Clearly, it's not quite the same as the PGA Tour level. But do you notice like that your kind of own golf kind of drifts a little bit on days sort of six and seven? Is that fair to say? Like, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I think there's bigger variance, I would say. I weirdly probably played some of my best golf at the end in the final round, but maybe that just suits my personality as someone who's so prone to overthinking. by the time I get to the sort of later rounds in something like that, I probably have kind of got out my own way a little bit, and I'm probably just playing golf rather than playing golf swing. But I think it can go one of two ways. It was like when we did the McMillan longest day thing last year. I think mentally you're probably a little bit more tuned in, like the body's probably not moving as freely, and your swing is maybe at its best round three of the four rounds that we played last year. But I think from a course management standpoint, like you are just making better decisions into the later rounds at a time like that. I didn't think mentally you're as fatigued. It's more just a case of, and particularly with those boys, like they're swinging the club so fast. You know, Kuchar famously does pretty well in events like that. He's got a pretty sort of, I don't want to say, an athletic swing, really. And that's going to hold up well when you've got to play seven rounds like that. Whereas if you're someone, I mean, Scheffler, like the motion that he's got going on there, you're just like, that guy's back must just be, why is what?
Why is it the Kuchar being unathletic? I mean, it seems to be counterintuitive. Why Would an athletic swing stand up to it more than an athletic swing?
Because I don't think he's putting as much force on his joints and his body.
Okay.
Like he doesn't have a massive amount of arm lift. He doesn't have a, you know, a huge amount of rotation going on. Like he's just got a fairly kind of...
stack and tilt.
Sort of.
Set up right, swing left.
Well, he's actually called one plane truth swing, I think is the name of that Gubbins catch line that like the instructor uses. But anyway... I just think there's a lot of variables like that that go into it. But maybe I've just got it spot off.
Interesting.
But they were all playing their for four rounds minimum, whatever it was, and the winners went on to seven. You know, there were some very, very good playoffs.
Yeah, I'd say was the most enjoyable part, probably.
Yeah. I would argue that I think all playoff holes in the PGA Tour should be par threes. Gonna throw out there. No.
Well, yeah. I mean, playoffs ending on the fifth playoff hole with a hole in one. I was watching it, and I was doing the catch up thing, and I'd have pretty much caught up by now because it was the end of the day. So I was like 1 minute off the sort of like broadcast level. I got one from Bruce on the WhatsApp just going, "What the fuck, Sergio?" And I thought, right, what's going on here? So I've got to watch this next shot. He's jammed the thing in. Unbelievable scenes. Yeah. I mean, that's just some of the best TV you can get, really. It's just a shame it's not in the final or anything like that.
Two clutch par saves, I thought, like back to back there, just to like, you know, cling on to Westwood. And then, I mean, I don't know if he just deliberately teed the ball up about a foot away from that massive furry microphone and the sound that ball made on a 9-iron. I didn't know you could compress a 9-iron that with that much venom. And yeah, unbelievable scenes, isn't it? I nearly spat my tea out when I saw that. But it's just kind of exciting, bizarre, isn't it?
There's such bias in the coverage. And it's not about just going into the coverage here. But I had a little bet pre-tournament on Bob Mack, 90-1. I thought, 90-1, this guy's bound to be a good match play golfer. I don't know where I dreamt that from, but I just assumed he was.
At the same time, you dream about the deadlifts.
I was thinking about the deadlifts at the time and you journaling with your butter coffee. And I was also, I don't know, anyone who listens to this pod regularly will know I'm a big fan of Bob Mack. So I just thought, do you know what? This is a good week for him. He's going to show some form here. And then he's playing against Adam Long in what was really one of the most important, you know, it was a really clutch moment, that kind of closing straight. I saw no shots, and we've missed a 371-yard shot that's gone to about 2 foot. Absolutely insane. And yet, the coverage never dips from other groups. But that, I think the only shot I saw from the whole match was Long putting it into the water on, is it the 11th or 12th, the one that there was obviously a tricked-up pin. I was like, what the fuck's going on?
Well, it seems bananas, because like you can't imagine that there's not cameras there, you know, like on every... They're not moving the cameras around, are they? There's just cameras in every hole. So I don't know why they chose to do what they did. You know, Tommy Fleetwood had a hole in one on the par three fourth, I think, in one of his rounds. And for ages they were digging it around going, "I don't know if we've got footage. We'll see if we've got footage. We'll try and dig some out." It's like, it's just staple stuff, guys. Like
they've got two shot tracers
on it. On every shot, they've got shot tracers. So you can see.
Well, yeah, they've got two track men on every tee box. That's like a significant amount of money on every tee box. It's one massive thing as well, just in the background. It's like if you're spending that on your favorite shot tracer technology, Sam, they should at the very least get some basic camera work out there as well, shouldn't they?
So we've agreed match play works well. I think that's kind of, we're in agreement on that point. A few comments into us this week on the DMs. The group format, how does that work for you?
I like the group format. I like the league. I think it kind of, I like the way that it's in, you know, I imagine, I think I'm going more and more for this World League thing. I think I am. I think I'd like to see match play in the league.
World League? What is that?
Yeah, the Premier League.
The most unwoke comment I've ever heard on this.
I think I am.
It's come straight out of your mouth.
I think you should go for the World League.
See, Matt? I think get it away from the US. Just spread it around a bit more. I like the match play. The group, there was plenty of matches going on. You could engage with it. You know, it works.
I just made good TV on Friday, didn't it? But it is just literally to protect the world's best players that are all seeded in that thing.
Can I just make a very, you know, my usual kind of one or two ignorant remarks I make every pod? Does anyone understand the whole ranking system and how people get in? Like, am I right in thinking it's top 50 world rankings getting to WGC events? I'm just, the only reason I ask is because Antoine Rosner and Andy Sullivan, I just didn't Antoine quite Sullivan. Expect to be there. So
Antoine Sullivan was a huge anomaly in the field for me. That must have been his like Hanbury Manor win or whatever we had in the England League.
He was 60.
I saw him and I saw Sullivan on a leaderboard. I was like, surely Andy Sullivan's not playing that. And you're right. I've just checked. And I think when he went into the event, he was even higher ranked than that, which is absolutely
I don't mean
mad.
That to be critical. I'm not having a go at Andy
Sullivan. I was genuinely shocked that he is near top 50 in the world status. Absolutely. I was floored by the whole thing. I was like, I don't understand whether he's just turned up at the event, was never, ever exempt for the event, and they've just had to let him play because it'd been rude to send him home. You know, like, yeah, we'll just squeeze you into a group here or something. It's the most bizarre. I don't know anything about Rosner. I mean, we're looking like hideously ill-informed podcast hosts here, but I don't know anything about him at all.
A couple of other honorable mentions. Bryson DeChambeau hit his weekly top, did he? Again, or maybe a couple of those.
Yeah, I know. He definitely
there's an unbelievable camera angle, isn't there, from a fan or something that was doing the rounds on social media.
ended up behind the fan's heel or something like that, didn't it?
Did he top it into a tree left? Ricocheted and went, unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
I wish I could have the sort of nonchalance that he had. When he was asked about it, he was like, yeah, I'm literally trying to drive par fours out here. I don't mind if I hit the odd top. I mean,
the two they're not mutually exclusive, Bryce. You know, it's not like an either or situation here. Anyhow, there was lots of entertainment from the event.
Just to jump back on Bruce's point there about world ranking points, here's an interesting one for you. Bob Mack finished, I think they categorize it as ninth, like tied ninth, which is just outside the quarters or whatever it was.
So top eight.
What do you think that does to his world ranking points?
That will be positive for sure. Yeah. So that's, I mean, he was something like 45th in the world. Was he going in? Something around that.
He was 44th going in.
So I'm guessing that's stuck him up to about 38, maybe.
Unchanged. Unbelievable, isn't it?
That's crazy.
He's kind of knocked out the world number one in the group stages and doesn't have an altered world ranking for it. That's an odd one, isn't it?
Get Peter Dawson on the line. Ask him about the OWGR.
What, is he responsible for it?
I believe he's the chairman of it, yeah.
Just throw it out there. Just whatever this one is. Just while we're at it, let's talk a bit about course. What do we think about the course?
Good fun. Looks good.
Look good. Yeah. What's the expression? I mean, you've got all the kind of jargon in the course architecture. Nomenclature down, haven't you, Sam? Is it heroic golf holes?
Nonclementia. I mean, it's
nomenclature.
Nomenclature is now the most highfalutin word we've ever had on the podcast. Congratulations!
I think that's an apt use, studying apt today, use of it, though.
I know. When you're trying to get a job, thesaurus, come on. What's the question?
Heroic golf holes. Is that what you call it? You know, so there's some heroic holes there.
I think so. It's match play golf, isn't it? Great back nine, brilliant back nine, isn't it? I think for match play, it's interesting.
Did you think that the course didn't look up to usual US standards?
What does that mean?
It looked a bit rough.
We're all a bit big fan of the firm and fast, the browns, the burnt out fairways, but it just looked a bit knackered. Do you not think it looked a bit messy?
All right, it's all right.
Perhaps you just don't notice it because there's usually fans everywhere. But like, I was just looking at it, just think like this isn't how the US usually presents its golf courses.
They've had some pretty ropey weather of late, haven't they?
Funny weather. Bermuda doesn't grow unless it's like 100 degrees, does it? So I think there's all of that sort of stuff going on.
Sam's an agronomist as well.
Yeah, but I think if there's any agronomists that listen to this part, please don't correct me on this, but if I am right, please do get in touch. I'm pretty sure something like that. Long and short of it, I think the course is pretty cool. It looks quite good fun. It doesn't look too long. There's lots of makeable par fives and fours and stuff. I'm sure it's a pretty good fun course to play. It looks a damn sight better than some of the flat stuff they play out in Florida, for my money anyway. But
yeah, I'd agree with that. Austin Country Club, is that right? Yeah.
Austin Country Club, Pete Dye got plenty of mentions throughout the East. He's really the hero of the PGA Tour, isn't he now, Pete Dye?
And also, quite interestingly, apparently Austin's becoming the new San Francisco Silicon Valley area. So there you go. Mm. He's attracting a lot of millennials who don't want to pay massive taxes, apparently. So there you go. There's a little geographic side note in there.
You have been looking at houses, have you, Bruce?
yeah. Trying to wean myself off golf on the day that courses are open after 4 months. Yeah. Before we wrap up next week, or this week, I should say, later this week, leading to the Masters, obviously, a few pros choose to play the week before. A lot of pros like to take time off and rest and, I don't know, go and play a practice round or whatever. Mills, I'm looking at you because you're usually the stats man who's just come far better prepared to podcast than me and Sam. Do we know? Do we know the down low on this event?
It's the Valero Texas Open, which is up next week. In terms of the field, there seems to be some. There's not massive hitters in there, but it seems to be a pretty sort of good field. You've got Tony Finau, but let's be fair, he's not going to be competing in the Masters, is he?
He won't be contending in any of
them. You guys,
he will up until round four.
He will up until Sunday.
I was actually surprised to see McIlroy out. Is there like a commitment that they have to do the WGC?
Well, we can't. It's amazing we've got this far in this podcast and we haven't touched on this. So, Pete Cowan, Rory McIlroy, breaking news. All of a sudden, I got a sort of a twitched phone call from Bruce on the, I think it was the Friday night, who was like, yeah, I mean, it's just going off. Any coach worth their salt is having their two penneth on Rory McIlroy switching over to Pete Cowan.
What does that mean, Bruce, in terms of like what will Cowan be doing with him? Like, because he hasn't lost Bannon, has he?
No.
How does Bruce know?
He's
Bruce
kept
knows
Bannon.
More than we do about what coaches do with people.
He's kept Michael Bannon, by the sounds of things. That followed pretty quickly on the announcement that, yeah, he was taking Cowan on. I don't know where Butch fits in all of this, because obviously he was doing some work with Butch around about Augusta last November. So, yeah, I can't imagine he's got three people working on it. It makes sense that he's got someone else alongside Michael Bannon, because obviously with travel restrictions still in place, and I think, you know, Michael Bannon's chosen to stay in Northern Ireland. He's not moving over to Florida, which is obviously where McIlroy is based. That kind of makes sense to have someone who travels around a bit more there as offering a second kind of pair of eyes. As for what Cowan offers, like, yeah, I mean, he's a pretty...
What's he known for?
He's a pretty technical coach, I think. You know, without wanting to contradict myself, he's also quite old school in the sense that, you know, he's got huge tour experience, obviously, the players he's worked with. But yeah, just to go back to Sam's point, this group on Facebook, Postmodern Golf, I mean, some of the vitriol there, they're obviously all just kind of giving their two penneth on this announcement. And essentially the argument was, well, Pete Cowan and Butch Harmon are, you know, Hall of Fame teachers, so no one's ever going to criticize the work they're doing with McIlroy appropriately. And, you know, we're all scientists in this group, or that's what a couple of people were saying. And you know, this isn't the right way of going about it. I do. And this is the problem I think fundamentally there is with golf instruction is whenever someone gets on like a, you know, their sort of stall and starts saying, this is the way to play golf, like, I've got the secret, you've just got to run away from them, because there are so many different ways of playing this game. And obviously Rory's got a very unique swing. It was just unbelievable. Yeah, as you say, Sam, it's just quite hilarious to see sort of this thread pop up in a group of 4,000 golf instructors just all, you know, swinging for the fences.
There's
on it.
There's so much out there, and you listen to that. You look at all the, you know, you look at the number of swing coaches out there on Instagram or YouTube or wherever you want to look. It's everywhere. And then you put yourself in the shoes of an amateur golfer that's like into swing, wants to figure out whether it's like cure your slice or anything.
Yeah.
It's like, shit, there's so much opinion on this matter.
Mm.
Granted, some of it's based in fact, but the golf swing is invariably contradicted by fact in many respects as well, because, you know, there's always competing forces. It's just like, it's a pretty, from what you told me, and I had a little flick through some of it, it's a pretty shocking indictment of, you know, the egos of some golf course, golf swing kind of experts, for want of a better term.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And anyone who, yeah, wants to, you know, I don't know, just have a kind of chuckle at yes, the clash of golf instructors' egos. Yeah, go and check out Postmodern Golf on Facebook. I mean, the clue is in the name, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a highfalutin name for people who are into golf swing, isn't it? But, I mean, fair play to Rory. I mean, it seems to be one bit of news after the next, isn't it? You know, now swing change and, well, swing, you know, in structural change, it's be interesting to see what happens. Everyone wants to see
everyone wants to see him, you know, get back to his best. And I think the reality is with someone like him, he's always going to be a little bit streaky, and he's never that far away from just going absolutely ape shit and shooting 61. And then everyone's kind of, you know, all the critics are silenced. Yeah. That's kind of, you know, we've seen him do that really not that long ago. I mean, was it the Canadian Open where he had like a 2, 3, or 4 shot lead going into the final round and then shot 61, lapped the field? It was like, right, okay. Yeah, maybe that's just the nature of it. It was just weird seeing him hit some, over the last few weeks, just seeing him hit some absolutely massive hooks at TPC and at the WGC. So
the weird thing about like Rory is like, he's obviously been playing some pretty poor golf from his standards and stuff, and everybody wants him to complete the Grand Slam. He's like fifth favorite for the Masters. He hasn't put two rounds together in about 3 months, and he's like fifth favorite. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Not quite right, has it? Two rounds. He hasn't put two rounds together, and that's not quite factually right.
He's not at the top of the field, is he?
Look clinical, Rory, but you know, I mean,
he came second in the Dubai Desert Classic and was
right, like, three groups away. Yeah, I think.
I'm just saying that, like, in terms of, I mean, often these betting companies know more than most, because that's how they make their money. But like, would you put money on him at 12-1, fifth favorite?
Maybe we can bring some insight to our listeners about gambling odds and why he's fifth. Maybe you can put that question to a guest on the pod in due course.
Okay. And on that note, wink. There's something very exciting coming up.
I look like I've had a stroke. It's really
weird. Yeah, it's also a podcast, so no one can see it. Perhaps I'll just use that as the teaser. So do keep your ears peeled for future podcasts. We are going to think looking
keep at your premium. Ears peeled. Oh, wow, I've never heard
can
that
you do
before.
That?
Yeah.
Incredible. Shocking. Absolutely shocking.
Keep your ears peeled.
I think the excitement of playing golf has got to him, Bruce.
He shut over down.
Look, lads, I'm
not going to do that. I'm a tired, tired young man. Please keep your ears peeled for the future. This podcast is going to go down the pan. We are releasing some good podcasts coming up soon. So if you want to get in touch, please do on @CookieJarGolf. And until then, we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Watch
this.